The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And here we go. The Duff and Susan McKagan family joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you from lovely Seattle, Washington. I'm sitting here with my wife, Susan Holm, of course, the author of the explosive The Velvet Rose novel. She's going to do the joke of the week this week, guys. Take it over, Sue.
What do you call an explosive horse? Hey, Paul.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Good job, Susan. Right off the bat, Susan Holmes McKagan making her Joke of the Week debut. I like it. Good stuff. And pick up a copy of her book, The Velvet Rose, wherever books are sold. A very cool story about a rock and roll star and the romantic life that he leads, something that she probably knows a lot about since she is married to a rock and roll star. So thanks to Susan for making her Talk is Jericho joke-telling debut. And thanks to the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, for returning to Talk is Jericho for the third, fourth, fifth time, whatever it may be. And it's live from the Jericho Cruise. I'm telling you right now, we had some technical difficulties with this one. There's a problem with the mics and the recording. So Rick sounds a little off mic, and the crowd cheering is really loud at times. You can still hear Rick and all his incredible stories, though, once you get used to the audio. We're talking about his first meeting and working with Hulk Hogan, what Triple H did for Rick when Flair returned to WWE, the advice he got from Harley Race, and what it was like wrestling in North Korea. He tells stories about Roddy Piper, Bruiser Brody, Dusty Rhodes, and Rick talks about his close call with death last year. A great conversation, as usual. And although it's not our usual sound quality, just bear with us and stick with it. It's worth it, I promise. Here we go. Ric Flair live from Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Seaport de. Woo!
Are you guys having a good time? Like I told you, that's your only job on this cruise, is to have a good time all the time. All right? So speaking of good times, this guy coming up right now is the epitome of a good time. He's literally the greatest of all time. The Nature Boy, Ric Flair! NASA in the Bahamas joined us yesterday, and you went to Rocky Johnson's funeral.
I did, which was sad but nice. Never liked to attend one of those, but it was a nice ceremony, and I think the family was happy with everything. And at the end of the day, he's in a better place, and that's how you got to look at it. He had a great life. And he and Anna made a beautiful son that we all adore. So, what more could you want as a father?
Did you work with him quite a lot? Were you close with Rocky?
I wasn't close with Rocky, but I worked with him a ton. He came from the San Francisco Roy Shire. He got to work with Ray and Pat. That's where he was a phenomenal athlete. I don't know if you guys remember, but he could do nip-ups and drop kick you, but like before the guys now drop kick you, land on his feet. He was a legitimate boxer. He trained with Ken Norton and Foreman, and just a really good athlete. And yeah, he did well. He was Georgia champion, which was a big deal back then. And he got into St. Louis, which meant you were in that category back then. If you know, as a kid, everybody grew up wanting to go to the Garden. If you were a WWF or WWE fan, and of course wanting to go to St. Louis if you were an NWA. So. And he made both venues, so in terms of wrestling career, and he ended up in the Hall of Fame. Chris, you were there that night. Yeah. Rocky inducted him the same year that I went in with the Briscoes and Gordon Soley, and doesn't get any better than that.
Right.
So listen, before Chris and I start talking here, I gotta tell all you girls, if I had a crib like this, you gotta see the room Chris came in, okay? So, I know you girls are just, you know, like, first of all, you know, it's... But, if it had crossed your mind, imagine a room that they've given me with three master bedrooms, a baby grand piano you could have played the piano at naked. You could have walked through the mist and the steam into this giant hot tub. Had that glass of champagne, the bubbly, as Chris would say. Come back and we would have gone ring around the rosy. Through all three rooms, all. Woo! 18 to 28, no boyfriends, no husbands.
Would you?
Hey, no shit, you gotta see this place up here. If you get lost, I'll hear you knocking.
Did you used to...
I hear you knocking, but you can't come in.
Well, that was one of your gimmicks, though. You would go in the ring, cut a promo, and tell everybody that the party was in your room.
Oh, not in the ring. I was in the mansion on TBS. I told the world, too. Nobody cared. I didn't care about the arena. They were coming anyway. But for those that couldn't get a ticket, that's when women came to wrestling. Now it's the guys' snowpop, right? Also,
where did you?
At one time, it was sold out of women.
Where did you come up with Space Mountain? Somebody just yelled at Space Mountain.
Oh God, that's a great story. I just was out all night and I. Spring break, you know, all you talk about is a college kid going to Florida. Like when I was like 15 or 16, I hitchhiked to Lauderdale. That was the deal. But Florida was a spring break, and I thought to myself, could we just party this Marriott on Riverdale Road? I mean, we'd do beat, and I'd pound it on TV, like the Marriott in Philadelphia and Baltimore. The damn Marriott. I used to tell my wife, the one I was married to then, that the Marriott gave me a deal to bring them all then.
Why are you bringing up the Marriott?
I don't know. We get free rooms, Double A and I are going to stay at the 8 Days Inn, half a horseman. So, and so I thought to myself, well, I just walked out and said, so if you're a girl and you're driving to Florida and you're thinking about riding Space Mountain, which was this ride that they created at Disney World, long, long after I was up and running, okay? And I said, all you gotta do is pull over on Riverdale Road, pull into the Marriott, you can ride Space Mountain all night long, and people just started saying it.
But well, it's so important to have those catchphrases.
And just so you know, they got a pharmacy on the boat, so. Father Time ain't catching up with you, need your boy.
While we're on the subject of your catchphrases, as you have so many of them, people yelling woo every single time they see you, every time someone goes a chop. What was the genesis of woo?
Literally, the woo, I got that from Jerry Lewis. Not the woo like
Six
that,
man.
But I love Jerry Lewis driving down the road at night. I'm sure I'm not the only one. You listen to music and you're making that shot. And ultimately, it'll be a shot to TV. You put that in your mind and wake up from. He was doing
I'm gonna bump those two a little bit.
Fire woo, and I just next day did it, and thank God I did.
Does it catch on instantly?
Yeah, 1974, I caught on instantly within North Carolina, in the Carolinas, but then I hit Atlanta TV. It took off, and now, I've made so many videos for college teams, pro teams, stuff like that, and hockey teams as well, as you know, Chris. About four or five teams that over the years I've made videos for, and I don't get paid for it, but it's a good deal, and it's funny that one day I just did it, coming out of a hangover.
Woo. You just mentioned all the stuff that you do. You had a real career resurgence. You're doing rap videos and
designed with Adidas.
Signed with Adidas. I was wondering.
I got a shoe coming out, kids.
I saw you announce widespread panic.
I'm like, yeah.
You know, widespread panic.
Oh, man. Hey, listen, I'm available for any kind of opportunity. It's so cool to see all these guys like Snoop and all that. Well, I've really become good friends with Snoop. But the thing with Offset caught me off guard. I had just gotten out of the hospital, and I was still very sick when I shot that video. But boy, that turned into a tremendous deal. 350 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Whatever the terminology is.
You're an iconic figure, and you think about the 80s, it was Flair on one side and Hogan on the other side. What were you thinking when Hogan was on his rise? Because he was much more of a... Well, actually, you're both showmen. So as a worker, as a phenomenon, was there a rivalry between you at all?
No. As a matter of fact, we met in Atlanta. He was on his way to Memphis before the Hulk Hogan character came. And the only way back then that I would care about Hulk, because he enjoyed... Well, a lot of people probably know that he enjoyed tremendous success in Minneapolis. He broke into Tampa with Hiro Matsuda and Eddie and those guys, but he moved to Minneapolis where I broke in with Vern Gagne, and he had this run with the guy who that Chris, I think the first time Chris and I, if Chris ever saw me in person, was I wrestled Nick for an hour in Winnipeg one night. He was the AWA champion and a great guy and one of the real legends of our industry. So Hulk had this ongoing thing with Nick, and they sold out St. Paul back then. It was, that arena was built for that hockey team, and they sold out 20,000 strong. Chairs on the floor, like six or seven shows, and it didn't put the title on them. And I don't know why. Nobody will ever know. Vern's gone now, and I certainly don't want to say anything that I'm not sure of, and then there was a marketing issue because I think, aside from Vince McMahon, we ultimately got to give this marketing, whatever marketing we all enjoy now, he's the guy that brought it to the forefront. But I think Hulk was right there in the initial marketing scheme too, so Hulk, Vince invented it. And Hulk was the epitome, and then look at Steve Austin and Rock. I walked into Anaheim in 2002. I had just come back, and the guy said to me, it's called The Pond, Chris has wrestled there many times, and it's where the Ducks play. And the kid said, man, we're having a hell of a night on t-shirts. And I said, what's the hell of a night? He said, we sold 8,000 Rock t-shirts and 7,000 wow. Austin t-shirts. And they were doing that every night, guys. Back then, and he'll tell you, because I tell Chris, I had just gotten there and I just had really been out of the loop. And that tag match, I think it was you and Angle or you and Rock, Austin. I mean, they had a run going, guys. And if the arena wasn't sold out, the guy was hot because they were the company was that on fire. So it was... fun for me to watch at that stage of my career, to see the pace, but you guys are moving along.
But when you came back, I remember there was a little bit of a confidence issue that you were having.
Terrible. I was broken. the Eric Bischoff WCW thing broke me. It broke, and Herb broke me 10 years prior, and the whole deal.
You just didn't have that belief in yourself at that point in time?
Huh?
You didn't believe in yourself or didn't know?
Well, you know, since you brought it up, let's go to, I'll give you an example. Let me ask you who's going to crack you. So, we had a guy named Shane Douglas. You probably don't know who he is. So, he was right on me and on me and on me. This is before social media was big, but enough. Because apparently, he didn't get a break in NWA with Crockett back when he and Johnny Ace were whatever they were. And, of course, Johnny had no problem with his career. Still doesn't. And then, so this went on. So one day, of course, they bring him in, and they have me put over Shane Douglas. Okay. He's in that category of where are they now? And I wondered, did Hulk put over Shane Douglas? No. Did Scott Hall put over Shane Douglas? No. Did Kevin Nash? No. Did Waltman? No. Did Savage? No. Did Piper? No. Did Chris Jericho? No. Did Hunter? No. Did Shawn Michaels? Hell no. Taker, Rock, Austin? No. But Ric Flair put him over. That's where Eric Bischoff wanted. That was it.
So basically,
Banco, when you hear this story that I was okay with it, trust me, I wasn't. It was a little bit of an inner turmoil for me.
So what was it that when you come into WWF at the time and you don't have the confidence, how did you finally get back in your groove?
Hunter, all the way. Triple H, guys. I was sitting in a chair and I was just sitting back and wondering, what am I even doing here? And Hunter walked out to me and said, hey, Taker wants to work with you. I went, what? And I wasn't ready. I was not ready for it. I mean, I went, oh my God. I said, I literally probably said to him, you're kidding. He said, no. He said, we're figuring that you and Taker in Toronto. And that was the year that Rock and Hulk met. Chris, you were there. I mean, I can't remember all the matches, but it was a phenomenal card. Sold out, bigger than life. And I wrestled Taker, and I mean, I struggled all the way till once I got in the ring and got going. But the anxiety, and I don't know if any, trust me, anxiety is a big word, and it's used. But if you've had it, you get it. The anxiety can throw your life out of whack. It can throw everything you do into a disproportionate state of where you should be mentally. So I had it, and but I got through the match, and like Taker threw me in. I missed the upside, you saw it, and he said, Taker looked at me and said, kid, let's try and get it right this time, right? I'm like 15 years older than here, 20 years older than he is. Come on, kid. And he threw me in and did the boot. I got the saw and went to work. Once I got the saw out, I was good. I can always do that.
Actually, funny, I've got two things to say. One, you mentioned all those guys that didn't put over somebody that should put over Shane Douglas. I might be the only guy that you ever beat with the figure four.
No, can't wait a minute. George South. You're right. And listen, those wins were few and far between.
I insisted on it.
Yeah.
And also, too.
No, it's the truth.
I also had you walk up to the top rope and actually give me an axe handle.
Yeah.
Because every other time you always get caught up there and you never learned your lesson. But hey. You got me. Yeah.
Hey, that's one of the reasons I'm here. You don't forget the things that people do for you on the way up.
Yeah.
You know, on the way up, and I was on my way out. And Chris was just really at the height of his career. And he said, hey, man, no problem. And those are the things that bring us together on nights like this. And even though I'm not supposed to drink, I'm going to drink with Chris later on. Now, I'll tell you something. He and I and his wife went to Tokyo in 2007. And what a mistake. I was trying to be true blue. So they went to Roppongi, which is this fabulous party here. A little bit like right here. Except, same kind of bright lights and all that. And I stayed in the hotel. Boy, how boring was I? And I was divorced a year later. I could kill myself for not going to Roppongi. If we had fun down there.
You were trying to be nice.
Down there, I squeezed you a long time.
Do you remember when we did the thing where I ended up wrestling, we were supposed to wrestle Mickey Rourke.
That was the greatest of all time.
Yeah, and we were doing the angle for it, and I was supposed to attack you and smash your Rolex.
Yeah.
And when I punched you in the face,
yep.
You started bleeding everywhere. And you were bleeding everywhere, so I was doing the old, you know, hit the cut,
yeah, open it up, brother, open it up.
Basically, you gigged, but you didn't tell me you were going to gig.
No. That you hit me with a monitor.
After.
Oh, that was another time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So
I can't remember one time.
So I go through the back, and Vince is furious, because that's when he just banned the sauce, banned the blading.
Did I have a blade?
Oh, yeah. Because you, I punched you in the forehead and got a little cut right there. So I go, so Vince is furious because there's blood everywhere and he's angry with me. And he's like, you got to take the blame on this one. I said, I didn't do it. He did. It doesn't matter. You taking the blame for it. You're fined $15,000.
Well, you had it. Hey, look at him now.
So I think
yeah, he got the big crib on the big side of town, kid. Oh, yeah.
The way I see it, you always
and he's still and he's still married. That's the key. That's the key to a beautiful, yes. Hey, to a beautiful, awesome. Beautiful woman.
Yes.
With three beautiful kids.
Yes, amazing.
Brother, yeah, amazing. Thank you.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You said something earlier when you mentioned St. Louis being kind of the mecca of the NWA.
It was.
Tell us a little about St. Louis, the promoter, why it was so important.
Well, if you're in NWA, St. Louis was the headquarters. There's a guy named Sam Mushnick. You don't have to really be old to remember that. I know. I think Dave Meltz is here. Dave can tell you. And by the way, I got to give Dave a shout out because after all these years, think about it, guys. This has been going on forever. The Wrestling Bible, we used to call it. If you got a shout out from Dave Meltzer, yay or nay, it was a positive deal. So anyway, the St. Louis was the deal, and if you got invited, they would invite people to honor that office, which was Geigel, Harley, Sam, and whatever, to St. Louis on a Friday night. You know that you had made it in the eyes of your peers. But also, it was a big payoff. It was a really unique venue, the Keel, and then the Checkered Old Location for Big Show. And it was Pat O'Connor, the Funks, the Briscoes, Gene Kiniski, Buddy Rogers. I mean, all the history of the people there. And then it was the Blackjack Mulligan, and then Ric Flair, and the Von Erichs, and Rocky Johnson. And I mean, like who's who? I mean, Hulk came in from Minneapolis one time. It was the, I got there, and you could beat a guy with an abdominal stretch. And that was what the guy used in the ring, like Wilbur Snyder is the name of the past. That was the finish. Sleeper hold, up hold. As a matter of fact, I'm probably responsible for the worst thing that ever happened, but I had to wrestle Dick the Bruiser for an hour. And we had to chain fall. And so I said to them, why don't you let me put my foot on the rope and have Dick lean back 1, 2, 3 rather than submit? Because if you were a good guy, submitting could be the, you know, that could move you down the ladder. So you're trying to avoid the submissions if possible. So this is back then. So we did it, and boy, that they were coming in the ring. There were the people were that hot, and they were that offended. I mean, you didn't touch the referee. All the stuff that I incorporated into my work over the years, which we call Cheap Heat, which I was the king of back then because it was tough going an hour with some of the guys that I had to wrestle an hour with. It started probably that night with, in terms of that main event level, because to go an hour with these guys that couldn't go any longer, you know what I mean? And Dick at that point, you know, was crippled up from football and wrestling. It was a very prestigious place to be in for the guys today and all the kids that are in the business and aspire to go places. And now it's more than the Garden, of course. It's more than St. Louis. It's any time that you can be in a big city. And it's being right here tonight on this boat. This is about as main event as you're ever going to experience. And it's a small venue, but it's sold out. And everybody's having a good time. And I can guarantee you the matches that are going on, the kids are working as hard for you as they would be in front of 20,000.
So let me just explain to people who might understand. As the world champion, you would have to go into these cities, and you said work an hour.
Every night.
And that's because you couldn't do finish, because you couldn't beat
them. No, the NWA was their rule. You either did you won, or you went what we call Broadway or through for an hour.
As the champion.
As the champion. And that was that way all the way along until the Von Erichs came along. And Fritz finally said one day we're going to do a DQ, and it changed it all.
So, our Broadway, I'm sure some guys are great to work with. Who are some of the ones you work with that were really hard to work with for an hour?
Oh, God. Well, it's really hard to wrestle an hour anyway. This time it's going to change. I don't care. I don't want to throw any names out there. But it doesn't matter. To go an hour, I mean, I've had guys throw up 5 minutes in, half hour in, roll out to the floor. I mean, I had to throw them back in the ring to roll out and throw up on the other side. I would tell a guy, like Harley Race told me, he said, best advice to ever give you never eat past 3 o'clock. You know, and I'm looking at guys that can wrestle me for an hour. Eating a Whopper at 7:30, I don't know, man. Don't think the pace would be quite that slow, but you don't know that until you've experienced it. It's not fair to, you just pass them along and hope they think about it. An hour's a long time, especially in front of 200 people. If you were in Kansas City, I used to call them going to Russia for a week. Yeah. Tough.
how would you structure a 60-minute match?
If it was a Barry Windham, it was easy. I'd do headlocks or arm drags. If it was Steamboat, boom, boom, boom. I mean, if a guy could go, you could have a phenomenal hour. It's pacing, but it's conditioning. I certainly didn't have a great physique, but I was always in shape. You know what I mean? So I kept myself in really good shape, no matter what I did to myself at night. I didn't work out hard. But it's pacing, and it's being able to hear the audience, what they like. You know, you can hear them go up and down. You know what I mean? You can tell. And it's so hard when you're on TV because as I watch, whether it be this program or WWE, and it's hard to get people, like, the enthusiasm level with you guys. Boom, I got out of the limo last night, and the match was going bam, bam, bam. And I mean, it's a new audience. It's a new company, and it's going to have that. And that brings a lot of excitement just to be a guy in the ring, like Chris or the Bucks or whoever else are out there working for All In. It's a huge bonus to have a good guy, bad guy recognition. Where you got a hero and you got a villain. It was the idea from day one, and then it's gotten where everybody is, you know, 50-50, and I get that. But it's fun when you got a crowd that is really, really into it. You know, boom, and every time you train a punch, boom. Boom, and then it builds and builds and builds, and then a big bump, and people explode again, and that's the story we all try to put together to achieve, to ultimately entertain you guys.
You know, you mentioned so many things, and there's a lot of directions I want to go in, but you just mentioned how good it is to have a good guy back and a crowd that responds.
Sure.
I just saw this a couple months ago when you wrestled in South Korea, and there was like 150,000
people. Oh, North Korea.
North Korea, sorry.
Yeah. With no key, yeah.
So then you put on like a headlock, and it was like,
yeah.
What was that trip like to you, the communist North Korea?
Well, you know, I guess it was it was interesting to me. I'll just tell you flat out front, I was scared to death, you know. And then at one of those deals, it started out with me. Well, first of all, here's the deal. If this is the way it kind of works with an agent that I work with, if Hulk won't do it, we'll call Flair. When you're represented by the same agent, sometimes you just gotta accept being number two, okay? So, but in this case, Hulk wasn't first, it was George Foreman. George said, don't think so. So then they went to Hulk, and Hulk said, can't make that one, brother. And so Eric said, come on, Rick. Okay. So I said, okay, what the hell? And it was with Muhammad Ali, and if you look at it at the end of the day, it was something I could say I always did. Of course, the promise was, whatever happens over here will never be seen anywhere. DVD next month, all over the world, same story. Different city, same story. But I had never worked with an Oki, and this is the truth, I mean, and that's one of those times where I think I'd seen him, and I knew that he understood how to wrestle our style, and it worked out great. It wasn't a masterpiece, no, but it got us out of the arena and back to the bar at the hotel, which is where I lived, because I was scared shitless. The guy looked at my Rolex when we got off the plane and said, "That is worth more money than I make in 1 year." I said, "Here." If it makes you feel good and I can get out of here sooner, you can have it, brother. I know, shit. Took our passports in it. So the first night I'm up with a press box watching, and the guys that was Steiners or somebody else president, they're expecting the Olympics. So, which I didn't understand at first.
Olympic wrestling.
Olympic, yeah, something like that. And the guy goes, "Well, how come that guy can get away from him so easy? How can a guy jump in there?" I don't know, he couldn't do it with me. Couldn't do that if I'm down there.
Because it was like a sports festival.
Oh, the sports festival. They thought we were bringing, you know, the Olympic Games over there. Different.
People were forced to go to the show.
Yeah.
So there's women, 150,000 people there. That
were just
190. Yeah. Cheering for everything.
Yeah, it was a different. I mean, it was something that I wouldn't ever forget, and I'm just thankful to Eric for getting me out of there. I was calling Eric on the phone, and I said, "Eric, they want me to say on TV that I think that they can blow up the United States. I don't know how that'll work when I get back to the mainland. Can you help me out?" So Eric negotiated. So we all boarded that sucker, and then we got off that plane and we got done, and Eric and I and our wives and girlfriends, whatever we were doing back then, it doesn't matter. We went and got drunk and for 3 solid days. It was a lot. I wouldn't advise, you know, it's making, it's not like being on this boat over there in North Korea, trust me. Not quite as festive.
Was there ever any times during the matches where you were scared for your life?
Not scared, but just, you know, you don't feel lost, scared during the match, but they take your passport and they let you know and then they divided us. That's what really threw me. Where I thought I was going to the same hotel with Eric and that, they put me in a different hotel, put Ali, so you're sitting there by yourself. We all found each other eventually, but you know, nobody knew what to expect. And it was probably a pretty cool deal that we went, but you couldn't have told me that at the time.
What I meant though is scared that there's been riots that were caused.
Oh, no, not at all. That's not like That's over here in the islands.
That's what I mean. Have you had those experiences in the islands or whatever?
Oh gosh, yes. I've been in a full scale riot. Oh god. The worst, the Dominican Republic, the Jack Benito, two with Jack, a riot in Trinidad 4 or 5 times with anybody from Brody to Carlos to Victor Jabica. Barbados, I was wrestling Roy Callender, the bodybuilder from Montreal. He tried wrestling him. Wait, they were so bad, they were coming in the ring and the policeman in Barbados ride horses, right? They shot one of the horses that got with them.
Wow.
So I was back at that Holiday Inn with Abdullah pouring down. So, yeah, I've seen San Juan too, we used to flip a coin. Brody, I was the world champion. And Brody and I would argue all night long as to who was going to go on last. 30,000 people at Baia Moon Stadium. And the people over there, 12-year-old kid, tell you it's going to kick your ass on the wood. Probably, but not if I can get to the Condado first. But there have been those days in the Condado, and I'm sure anybody that's been in there in the old days. You could be at the Holiday Inn. I was there one night with the Briscoes and Hot Rod. And we're raising hell and drinking and everything. And in came a guy, walked in and shot a guy in the dance floor. It took all of 10 minutes to calm it down, drag the guy out, and the band started up again. That's having that around of drinks, folks. I left Piper there one time in jail. He said, I went fishing. Oh, I got to be in Asheville, pal. You got yourself in here. I left Roddy right there. I sure did, Roddy. God rest your soul. I admitted it to you, but I was getting in that Eastern Airliner, man.
You were really tight with Piper.
Oh, God, like this.
Yeah.
The greatest guy. Yeah, everybody have a drink for Roddy Piper. He'd have been amongst you tonight.
Yeah, he'd be here. Where did you first meet him?
He came into Charlotte in 1978. And I fell in love with him. Just, God dang. So much talent. The gift of gab. Quick, witty, honest. Legitimately loved the business. The word was never, I mean, wrestling is, but you like to call it fighting. I feel bad. He got involved and he got paranoid toward the end of his career. And I think that. Where you can't fight off that edge, you know, because you're constantly in your quest to be recognized as the best, in your quest to be Wrestling Observer Wrestler of the Year, be the top heel, and here's how I close it out with Bret Hart all the time. Hey, Bret. Because that was the joust, right? And by the way, I'm going to put him right there too. Anybody tells you they haven't talked to him, Meltzer over the years is a liar. With the exception of maybe Hunter and Taker and Shawn Michaels. Everybody's talking to Meltzer. But here's my ended award after me, so argument's over. Me and Lou. If that guy loses that year, he'd fight all of you. I'm not.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So when Piper goes to WWF, once again, you're over in NWA. A lot of your friends, what was the final catalyst that made you go to WWF in 92?
That was Jim Hurd, WCW. He wanted me to go. The worst thing I ever did was cut my hair. I can remember walking through the airport, nobody knew me. I mean, I was frightened.
Why did he want you to cut your hair?
Because he wanted to call me Spartacus. They wanted me to change my name.
What?
Put a earring. You know that.
Well, not really, though. I mean,
you know that story, Chris, please.
Spartacus.
Yes.
After being Ric Flair for 20 years, you're now Spartacus.
They wanted to call me Spartacus. You saw that haircut. What other explanation could there be?
It's terrible, yeah.
I love my hairdresser. It wasn't that.
There's a little
yeah.
Bob, a little
peach. No, I know. I looked like a 12-year-old kid that did, with a surfboard, you know, that shoved up my butt. It was that bad. I remember I had to wrestle Fujinami for the title, and I looked at that picture of me, and I said, God, Rick, it's really how I ever came to that.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You went with it. So that was I'm sure.
I don't think I had a choice at that point. He cracked me.
Gotcha.
The way that Jim Ross got along with Jim, was Ross kept him whiskeyed up. So that was it. I didn't have access to him like Jim did, because Jim Ross, who was a great mind and a smart guy and one of the greats, trust me. I'm sad that he got off the boat. I was looking for him last night. And really understands our business, but I figured out Ross just kept him liquored up, so he didn't have to put up with it. But they'd come in that room and tell all of us what was up, and he looked at me and told me that. And Kevin Sullivan, I'll never forget, looked at Jim Hearn and said, why don't we just change Mickey Mantle's number?
Right.
Do that too. So Kevin stuck up, but he was hell-bent on ruining me. And that was it.
So you called Vince and... Vince.
No, what I did is, they started me going, they wanted me to come in 86 to wrestle Savage at SummerSlam. And I said no, and we didn't have contracts back then, I just had a deposit on the belt. And I was with Arn and Tully and Barry and God, and just, we were selling out everywhere, I was happy, and it was never about not going up there and having fun, because DiBiase, Piper, Ryan, a lot of friends up at Orton, a lot of guys that I was friends with are already gone. I just couldn't get myself to leave that circle of friends that I was with. And then we talked maybe in 88, and I just started doing it. So when I quit, I just called him and said, well, if the invitation's still open, man, I'm here. And by the way, I got the belt. I tried to give it back, and he wouldn't take it. That's the guy's honest truth. I said, take it. He said, shove it up here. So
when you said you had to put a deposit on it, as the champion, you have to take the belt with you everywhere.
As a champion, back, you know, when you first went, as a world champion, we put down $25,000. A certified cashier's check to the treasurer of the NWA at that time. And it sat in an account. Interest. So when I finally, after all that stuff, and it went back, finally, I sent the bill back, I got a check for 50 grand. That's how long I'd had
you had it.
Yeah, like 48,000. So that's how long I'd had it in the 25 grand. And the thing of it is, I said, hey, I'll fly down to Columbus and drop the belt to Barry tomorrow. And he said, screw you. But I wasn't going to do it on a pay-per-view. Because it's like the same scenario. He said, I'm going to give you a contract. We'll do your contract after you drop the belt.
Right. All your leverage is gone.
Yeah. Well, it's like the same time when I dropped the belt to Hulk, going to another era in Orlando, right? And then we went to Des Moines, Iowa, and did the match where we decided ultimately that Hulk won again, right? And then we're going to go to number 3 to a cage match where I've already lost twice. So they call me, and this is the Ric Flair deal again. Well, it's the same press loud, but Eric, and they call me and say, look at your advance, it's slow. Well, I wonder why it's slow. You've already beat me twice, and so I'm going to win in a cage match?
Right.
Where he would have won it if we had done this right. And, we'll put your career up. You can take a year off. Swear to God. Take a year off. Give me a new contract. Go home. I was back working in 60 days.
Wow. After losing your career.
After losing my career.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, just one thing after another. Anything to run the page down.
Yeah. When you first got...
And that's because somebody else wouldn't do... You know, they needed someone to do the picture. I won't get into the list of names.
Why would you never? Well, why did you never say no to some of these?
Because I, you know what? I wanted so bad to be part of it. Why do you think I came back? I mean, I can tell you, and I've been assured of this, that I would have made $10 million on that lawsuit against her. You're not allowed as a VP of a company to walk out in front of 70 people and say you're going to break somebody, ruin their family, put them in bankruptcy. It does not work like that for a publicly traded company. And everybody that's ever sued Turner, a wrestler, has gotten paid. True? Everybody. Didn't even go to court. They don't want it. I would have gotten paid. But I would have sat home, and I would have never been able to resume my career, and I would have never, and I say this from the bottom of my heart, I was dead in the water. They called me, Vince went and did that last show with Sting, and Sting and I were both embarrassed because I wasn't in shape to wrestle, I wore a shirt. I mean, I went home, I was lost, and I was just devastated. And they, Ross and Vince called me and said, hey, we got plans for you. No phone call for a year and a half. Man, I went, oh, God. So I just, man, they want to know when I started the daytime drink. I was at the country club at noon, kid. Never used a membership one time. Let me tell you something. I can tell you about daytime drinking. you give me a girl bartender at a bar, especially the land of Georgia where I almost killed myself a couple years ago. I had a little routine. I can find him at I can even find him at what's that place I go to? I don't go anymore. It's all past tense. Wendy's at the Four Seasons in the Bahamas. Don't forget RickFleshHub.com. But, oh yeah, I can, Jesus, I got to wreck and find a bar, man. And if I knew the manager, if it was legal to open at 11, they opened at 10.
The story that you're talking about was when Bischoff had a team meeting with the entire roster. Yeah. He said, I'm going to put Ric Flair out on the street, yeah, start his family.
Yeah.
You weren't there. Who told you about that?
Booker. I saw Booker last night.
Yeah.
Booker called me and said, hey, man, this ain't right. And I had dinner with Booker last night. We just talked about it. I said, hey, you know, I don't get it. You know, like, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, obviously.
For taking my son to a youth wrestling tournament and missing Thunder.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You talked earlier about, we've never discussed this, about the Von Erichs.
Yes.
Let's put in perspective, how popular were the Von Erichs?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
They were Hulk Hogan and Ricky Steamboat, and I mean, to wrestle the Von Erichs in the state of Texas was an unbelievable, especially Kerry. The kid was over, very few people have ever seen him as, I mean, he never can say he was over like Hulk or Steve or Rock, but he was close, and had he been in this time frame with that look and that video of him riding to Palomino on the beach, the loincloth like Tarzan, the long hair, to the Rocky music, and I mean, and Keith Mitchell, who does the show for you guys, was the guy behind all that. He's a genius himself. He's just, there are very few people, guys like Kevin Dunn and Keith Mitchell are few and far between. The commitment and dedication, and it's the stuff that you don't see until you see the finished product. So spectacular what they're able to do.
Let's talk about when you put Kerry over for the NWA title.
Yes.
It was a big deal because it was the, I mean, he had been champion for a long time, and Kerry was being groomed. Fritz was obviously in the NWA board of directors. How did that all go down?
Well, what happened was, Kerry's older brother, David, who really was a very good worker and a great kid, had gotten sick and passed away in Tokyo maybe 3 months prior to that. So they decided to have the David Von Erich Memorial. And it was May 6th, and the night before I was in Portland, Oregon, wrestling Roddy Piper, special guest referee Red Bastien for an hour.
And afterwards, Piper, Red Bastien, and Flair were at the Red Lion on Jansen Beach until 5 a.m. for a 6 o'clock flight for an afternoon show to Dallas. So, brother, I slept, got to the arena, but I knew I had carried DZ. But what nobody realized, they did it with the matinee of the show that at night with 106 degrees in Dallas. And they had 53,000 people. And they were carrying people off the field for dehydration. You heard about that. And even when, by the time I got out there to wrestle Terry, which was on last, the mat was still hot. Yeah, I wrestled Santana one time in Texas years before Tito Santana. And doing that outdoors in McLean, Texas. For Gallon, rather. And it can be that hot. But it was a great night for them. The match before me was the Freebirds against the other Von Erich boys and Fritz, and I've never seen a crowd higher or more crazy in my life. And you would think, oh God, then we gotta go out and try and follow that. And Kerry came out that door, and he was on that night, and it was easy. I just figured something easy. Wouldn't matter, could have won the claw, but they'd already done it. I can't remember, backslide or something. And it was crazy, but the sad thing is, it's because of health issues. A week later, after they called me and said, you gotta go to Tokyo. It's not working out for Kerry. And I think he had missed his first shot.
One week later,
yeah.
Wow, yeah, because we had a lot of substance problems.
Yeah. So that's one thing you can't. We live by the clock, and Jack Briscoe did it best. You know, you get up in the morning, you fly to the town, you look at your watch, right? You get to the arena, you wrestle for an hour, you go back and drink for an hour, right? You get up in the morning, you do this 365 days a year, an hour every night. It cracked Jack Briscoe so bad one time. He was flying into West Palm Beach, his home being Tampa, called Eddie Graham and said, have someone there tonight, and I'm dropping it. So the big scramble back then, the political thing, was it Harley or Terry? And they, I don't know who was right, but Terry got it, Harley thought he was, which was a big, it would have been a fight right now,
right?
Different. And Jack drove back to Tampa, walked up on the Gambit Bridge, right, wrong time, right?
Yeah.
Took off his Rolex watch and threw it in the ocean, never wore it again.
That's symbolic of
every night. He and Dory traveled with the team in junior every night. And it was a phenomenal match. Fans got everything. But it was still an hour every night. The most I ever did was, I think I did right at 280, maybe almost 300 one year.
300 hours a year or 300 matches a year?
300 hours. I did at least 250 for 6 or 7 years.
And this was
even with Dusty. I mean, even I'm wrestling Dusty for an hour. He booked it. I mean, I'd get to Florida. Monday I'd have Barry for an hour. Tuesday I'd have Barry for an hour. Wednesday I'd have Mike Rotunda for an hour. Thursday I'd have Dusty for an hour. I could have Steve Kern. I could have Mike Graham. It was an hour. It wasn't just, it was everywhere. And they were sold out then. Was easy, but it was an hour. And Eddie, that didn't come from Dusty, it came from, Dusty didn't want to do an hour, but he could. And that's what made Dusty Rhodes special. He could do 5 minutes and tear you guys up and have you excited. He could talk, didn't look like he could wrestle for an hour, but he could. That's right.
As we
start... time!
As we start to wind down here,
why wind it down?
Oh, we'll just keep going then. Jeez. Keep going.
How's that a first 2 hour Chris
Jericho? What was the worst?
I'm trying to get you to your family.
What was the worst that you ever cracked? Because you're talking.
Oh, God, the worst I've ever cracked. Oh, God. I've got two. So, you guys know what agoraphobia is? The Sigourney Weaver deal, right? Remember the movie? I had it.
What is it?
Sigourney Weaver, agoraphobia, you can Google it. I had it for about a month. It's where you can't get yourself to leave a comfortable position.
Okay.
it's like in your home. Like she couldn't in this movie.
Oh, gotcha.
She was a fabulous either a novelist or a crime analyst or whatever. But she had agoraphobia and she couldn't leave her home. And I got that for about a month. I literally had to have someone with me. I'm fine. But I had to travel like that in those situations. So we were in Detroit and Arn, and I was wrestling Junkyard Dog every night. And Arn ran in a white milk truck to pick us up at the airport. This riveting, right? I was just an all-time low, and I had an attack that night. So Kevin Sullivan, on his day off, took me all the way back to Charlotte. And I walked in the house, and I knew that I'm already thinking I'm going to leave tomorrow. What am I going to do? That, in the United States, is the worst. But the worst ever was I wrestled Butch Reed in Orlando in the old armory. It's all tin building, 110 degrees. And Butch Reed was a hand. But Eddie was one of these guys that wanted to come up with something that they'd never seen. So it was me against Butch Reed for the world title. I was a champion for an hour in a cage, and you couldn't use the cage as a weapon. So I was Eddie Guerrero, not Eddie, Hector. With Hector, I was with him all week long, and no cell phones. And I called my dad. I had to go to Tokyo the next day. I knew that I had to wrestle Jumbo and Gender back-to-back for an hour. So I called my dad and said, Dad, my heart racing. My dad was a doctor, and he said, when was the last time you went to bed? And I said, probably not this past month, you know, because I've been in Florida all week long. Nobody slept in Florida, so I got up, caught the plane in Tampa, Chicago, got on number 3, Northwest, rolled over the rank all the way. Got there, I made up my mind I wouldn't do it. And you hear my toga, Bob's wife going, Flair's on his voice, you know. I had a paper ticket, which is probably the reason I don't do it anymore. I walked over to a flight to Seattle, gave it to him. Didn't even get my bags. Flew all the way back. Tokyo, Seattle, Chicago. Chicago, Charlotte. Jimmy Crockett was there. Turned me around, back on the plane, all the way back to Tokyo. I made it to the building 1 hour before the match. Wrestled an hour. Broke a sweat, went back out that night. The funny thing is, I flew with a guy. I sat down on the plane in Seattle, in Tokyo, and I said, can I talk to you? And the guy said, yeah. I said, yes. And I probably thought, like, what's this guy doing? And who's this guy with the long hair? And I said, that. So, for years, he sent me a Christmas card. He said, the first one I ever got was, he said, I didn't know who you were and how famous you are. He said, I hope you're feeling better. So wherever he is, thank you, man. Because I was dying.
So you flew all the way to Tokyo, basically turned around, flew all the way back, and someone was waiting for you saying,
Jimmy Crockett and my wife, man. I didn't even change clothes. Back on the plane. Bloody married up again.
When you mentioned earlier going to Vince in 92, the obvious match is Flair versus Hogan. But you never did that.
No, we didn't. I don't know why. I just heard that last week, and I'll probably hear it forever. I was so happy to be there, I didn't care. I never walked up to Vince. To this day, I've never asked him why.
Never asked him. It's amazing.
I think Vince, if I were to very good accurate, guess it was that Vince that Hulk wanted to do some stuff away from the business, and Vince was looking at the future, and, you know, he was so good about it where a lot of guys, you know, I was 41 or 42 when I got there. So I was 40, I wrestled Steamboat in 89, so I would have been 43, right? So that's kind of like you start looking at your career back then. Now the guys have got more longevity, thank God, and deserve it. But there's a point where you just start for who you were, and I knew that. But what I had done is I supplemented entertainment. So what I didn't have in terms of credibility and in-ring ability, actually the entertainment part of me, you know, I found that, and falling on my face, as good as taking a suplex.
Gets a bigger reaction too.
Yeah, but that was it. He, You know, it's funny. He said, you know, Scott's here tonight. He said to me, hey, you can wrestle Scott Hall tomorrow. And I can't remember what the situation was at a pay-per-view. I'll make you a good day. Watch once you're back in Charlotte. I'll keep you here. Or you can go home and, you know, get what you want back. So I went back home and went back and I was good for, well, maybe a month. Right back into it again, but at the end of the day, look where I am. I'm with all you guys and remember, guys, can't ever say that I didn't have the best of everything in life. Including a night like this with all of you. So, Chris Jericho, why didn't I think of this? I mean, really, 30
you're too
years
busy.
Ago.
You're too busy at the bar.
Oh, my God. No. I mean, why did I think of this cruise gimmick in the 80s, guys? On the QE3. I mean, come on.
I just want to ask a quick question. You had a very serious health scare a couple years ago. You have a whole new lease on life.
I do.
What did you change and what did you get out of this near-death experience?
Well, my lease on life is, and it would take me another hour to explain just how sick I was. And Chris knows, there's some people that do, but I was, you know, I was 12 days on my support and 31 days in my ICU, and then I woke up and really did not have full access. Remember, I saw my 30 for 30. I went to it. It's the first event I ever went out to and didn't remember seeing it.
Oh, wow.
So I could remember going forward. I couldn't remember the back. So my I tell people now when I speak publicly on that is that, and I know this sounds okay and you're drinking, you're going to say you're full of shit, but there's going to be a time in your life when you wish you had told someone you cared about them, or you're engaged in an argument with a family member, or you're not getting along with somebody, and I guarantee you, life is too short. And you can be 35 years old, it doesn't change, you can be in a car wreck tomorrow, but just talking about stuff that I did to myself. My illness is self-inflicted through all the hard living. But I woke up wanting to apologize to everybody in the men's senses with anybody I had a crossword with, you know? It's like I'm with Scott and Kevin and over there in Liverpool, and we're all talking about that. And we've all said mean things about each other. I regret everything I ever said mean because it's not worth it. It's not worth it to think about the things that are negative. And I know you're saying it's corny and you guys are twins, but I mean, it's not worth it. And especially to a family member, God, if you're in a family argument, who cares who's done what to who and why? God, let it go. It's not worth it. It's not worth this. And guess what? You might not have the opportunity that I had. I had to make up for a lot, man. The other thing is, which I'm really good about this, I lived a fairy tale, guys. I mean, I lived in a fairy tale world. Now, I'm with Wendy. I sit in a chair now at night, and my life is so good that I have a hard time not worrying about some girl calling me. When you're in a hospital, if this was 10 years ago and my wife had my phone and I'm in a hospital dying, shit. There's some activity on the line. And thank God there wasn't. I'd been clean. By that, I don't mean drugs. Clean. All you girls that just keep causing me all kinds of shit. No, I mean, I had a real problem with women. And I used to talk to them, and I never carried two phones, but I might have once. But I was in a plane crash, and the pilot died, and the worst thing that ever happened was he had a girlfriend in Denver, Colorado, and he had a fiance in Charlotte. Double knockout at the door, and the guy never regained consciousness. I mean, I never had to live that, but I did have to tell the guy in the van, put me in the, and taking me out of the van in the hospital, tell Sheila not to call. Or tell Sheila I love her. Just not to come on by. So anyway, I don't live like that anymore, guys. I got, nobody's got my number. I blocked them all out. God. Yeah, hey, I'm clean. No pictures. Yeah, that's a miracle in itself. I don't send him an armor safe anymore. And I don't care about robes on the airplane.
That's a whole other podcast. Last question for you. Favorite opponents? And is there a favorite match that you had after thousands and thousands of great ones?
Oh gosh, that's the hardest question to answer. Greatest moment of my career is my daughter winning the title in Houston, Clash of Champions against Nikki Bella. I just can't name one guy. Harley Race made me. Ricky Steamboat, Sting, Dusty, Hunter, Sean, Chris Jericho, Taker, the list of people, Wahoo McDaniels, I mean, Blackjack Mulligan, Ernie Ladd, Andre the Giant, I mean, Bret Hart. There's nobody that I haven't wrestled with. And I apologize to everybody. I mean, look, making reference to Bret and I. You know, Bret and I got into it, I don't even know why, but back now, Bret and I, we see each other, it's very cool. And just, it's the way it should be, you know. Did I like NWO when they were WCW? Hell no. But I am so happy for Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Waltman, and whoever goes there. Because you know what? If you're looking at what changed the business and what revolutionized the business and what faction did something, the NWO sure is no good. And it was never an NWO against Ric Flair, never Scott Hall and Nash. By design, and now we get drunk and we have fun, and I'll be with Scott later tonight. He runs from me now. He can't be good. I'll find him.
Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest world champion of all time.